If he knew where Madame Octa was, why hadn't he taken her before this? I thought he'd be furious, but he seemed amused. Why hadn't he ripped out my throat like Steve said he would? Sleep was impossible. I was more terrified now than I'd been the night after stealing the spider. Back then, I could tell myself that he didn't know who I was, and so couldn't find me. I thought about telling Dad. After all, a vampire knew where we lived and had reason to bear a grudge against us. Dad should know. He should be warned and given a chance to prepare a defense, but he wouldn't believe me, especially not now that Madame Octa was gone. I imagined trying to convince him that vampires were real, that one had been to our house and might come back. He'd think I was a nutter. I was able to snooze a bit when dawn rolled round because I knew the vampire couldn't launch an attack until sunset. It wasn't much of a sleep, but even a small bit of rest did me good, and I was able to think clearly when I woke. I realized, as I thought it over, that I had no reason to be afraid. If the vampire had wanted to kill me, he could have done it last night when I was unprepared. For some reason, he didn't want me dead, at least not yet. With that worry off my mind, I could focus on Steve and my real problem, whether to reveal the truth or not. Mum had stayed at the hospital all night, taking care of Mrs. Leonard, ringing round to let friends and neighbours know of Steve's illness. If she'd been home, I might have told her, but the thought of telling Dad filled me with dread. Ours was a very quiet house that Sunday. Dad cooked eggs and sausages for breakfast, and burned them as he normally does when he cooks, but we didn't complain. I hardly even tasted the food as I gulped it down. I wasn't hungry. The only reason I ate was to pretend it was any other average Sunday. Mum rang as we were finishing. She had a long talk with Dad. He didn't say much, only nodded and grunted. Annie and I sat still, trying to hear what was being said. He came in and sat down when he was finished talking. "How is he?" I asked.
"Not good," Dad said. "The doctors don't know what to make of it. It seems Annie was right. It is poison, but not like any they know. They've sent samples to experts in other hospitals, and hopefully one of them will know more about it, but..." He shook his head.
"Will he die?"
Annie asked quietly. "Maybe," Dad said, being honest. I was glad of that. All too often adults lie to kids about serious matters. I'd rather know the truth about death than be lied to. Annie started to cry. Dad picked her up and perched her on his lap.
"Hey now, there's no need to cry," he said. "It's not over yet. He's still alive. He's breathing and his brain doesn't seem to have been affected. If they can figure out a way to fight the poison in his body, he should be fine."
"How long does he have?" I asked.
Dad shrugged. "The way he is, they could keep him alive for ages with machines."
"You mean like someone in a coma?" I asked.
"Exactly."
"How long before they have to start using machines?" I asked.
"A few days, they think," Dad answered. "They can't say for sure, seeing as how they don't know what they're dealing with, but they think it will be a couple of days before his respiratory and coronary systems begin to shut down."
"Is what?"
Annie asked between sobs.
"His lungs and heart," Dad explained. "As long as those are working, he's alive. They have to use a drip to feed him, but otherwise he's okay. It's when, if he stops breathing by himself, that the trouble really begins."
A couple of days. It wasn't much.
The day before, he'd had a whole lifetime to look forward to. Now he had a couple of days.
"Can I go see him?" I asked.
"This afternoon, if you feel up to it," Dad said.
"I'll feel up to it," I vowed.
The hospital was busier this time, packed with visitors. I'd never seen so many boxes of chocolates and flowers. Everybody seemed to be carrying one or the other. I wanted to buy something for Steve at the hospital shop but had no money. I expected Steve to be on the children's ward, but he was in a room by himself because the doctors wanted to study him, and also because they weren't sure if what he had was catching. We had to wear masks and gloves and long green gowns when we entered. Mrs. Leonard was asleep in a chair. Mum made a sign for us to be quiet. She gave us a hug, one by one, then spoke to Dad.
A couple of results have come in from other hospitals,
she told him, her voice muffled by the mask.
All negative.
Surely someone knows what this is, Dad said. How many different types of poison can there be?
Thousands,
she said.
They've sent specimens to foreign hospitals. Hopefully one of them will have a record of it, but it's going to be some time before they get back to us.
I studied Steve while they were talking. He was tucked neatly into the bed. A drip was attached to one arm, and wires and stuff to his chest. There were needle marks where doctors had taken samples of his blood. His face was white and stiff. He looked terrible. I started crying. I couldn't stop. Mum put her arms around me and hugged me tight. But that only made it worse. I tried telling her about the spider, but I was crying too much for my words to be heard. Mum kept hugging and kissing and shushing me, and eventually I quit trying. New visitors arrived, relatives of Steve's, and Mum decided to leave them alone with him and his mother. She led us out, removed my mask, and wiped the tears from my face with a tissue.
There,
she said.
That's better.
She smiled and tickled me until I grinned back.
You'll be okay,
she promised.
I know he looks bad, but the doctors are doing all they can. We have to trust them and hope for the best, okay?
Okay,
I sighed.
I thought he looked quite good,
Annie said, squeezing my hand. I smiled thankfully at her.
Are you coming home now? Dad asked Mum.
I'm not sure, she said. I think I should stick around a little longer in case.
Angela, you've done enough for the time being, Dad said firmly. I bet you didn't get any sleep last night, did you?
Not much, Mum admitted.
And if you stay on now, you won't get any today either. Come on, Angie, let's go.
Dad calls Mum Angie when he's trying to sweet-talk her into something. There are other people who can look after Steve and his mum. Nobody expects you to do everything.
All right,
she agreed.
But I'm coming back tonight to see if they need me.
Fair enough, he said, and led the way out to the car. It hadn't been much of a visit, but I didn't complain. I was glad to get away.
I thought about Steve as we drove home, how he looked and why he looked that way. I thought about the poison in his veins and felt pretty sure the doctors would fail to cure it. I bet no doctor in the world had ever come across poison from a spider like Madame Octa before. However bad Steve had looked today, I knew he'd look a lot worse after another couple. I imagined him hooked up to a breathing machine, his face covered with a mask, tubes sticking into him. Oh, it was a horrible thought. There was only one way to save Steve, only one person who might know about the poison and how to beat it. Mr. Krebsley. As we pulled into the drive back home and got out of the car, I made up my mind. I was going to track him down and make him do what he could to help Steve. As soon as it got dark, I'd sneak out and find the vampire, wherever he might be. And if I couldn't force it out of him and come back with a cure, I wouldn't come back at all. Chapter 24. I had to wait until nearly 11 o'clock. I would have gone earlier while Mum was at the hospital, but a couple of Dad's pals came round with kids of their own and I had to play host. Mum returned home about 10. She was tired, so Dad quickly cleared the house of visitors. They had a cup of tea and a chat in the kitchen, then went up to bed. I let them drift off to sleep, then snuck downstairs and let myself out the back door. I sped through the dark like a comet. Nobody saw or heard me, I moved so fast. I had a cross in one pocket, which I'd found in Mum's jewellery box, and a bottle of holy water in the other, which one of Dad's pen friends had sent to us years ago. I wasn't able to find a stake. I'd thought about bringing a sharp knife instead, but probably would only have cut myself. I'm clumsy with knives. The old theatre was pitch black and deserted. I used the front door this time. I didn't know what I'd do if the vampire wasn't here, but somehow I sensed he would be. It was like the day Steve threw the scraps of paper up in the air with the winning ticket hidden amongst them, and I shut my eyes and reached out blindly. It was destiny. It took a while to find the cellar. I'd brought a torch, but the battery was almost dead, and it flickered out after a couple of minutes, leaving me to grope through the dark like a mole. When I did find the steps, I started straight down, not giving fear time to catch up. The further down I went, the brighter it got, until I reached the bottom and saw five tall flickering candles. I was surprised. Weren't vampires supposed to be afraid of fire? But glad. Mr. Krebsley was waiting for me at the other end of the cellar. He was sitting at a small table, playing a game of cards with himself.
"Good morning, Mr. Shen," he said, without looking up.
I cleared my throat before replying.
"It's not morning," I said. "It's the middle of the night."
"To me, that is morning," he said,
then looked up and grinned. His teeth were long and sharp. This was the closest to him I'd been, and I expected to spot all sorts of details. Red teeth, long ears, narrow eyes. But he looked like a normal human, albeit a tremendously ugly one.
"You've been waiting for me, haven't you?" I asked.
"Yes," he nodded.
"How long have you known where Madame Octa was?"
"I found her the night you stole her," he said.
"Why didn't you take her then?"
He shrugged.
"I was going to, but I got to thinking about the sort of boy who would dare steal from a vampire. And I decided you might be worth further study."
"Why?"
I asked, trying to stop my knees from knocking together.
"Why, indeed," he replied mockingly.
He clicked his fingers, and the cards on the table jumped together and slid back into the packet by themselves. He put it away and cracked his knuckles.
"Tell me, Darren Shen, why have you come? Is it to steal from me again? Do you still desire Madame Octa?"
I shook my head.
"I never want to see that monster again," I snarled.
He laughed.
"She will be so sad to hear that."
"Don't make fun of me," I warned him. "I don't like being teased."
"No?"
he asked.
"And what will you do if I continue?"
I pulled out the cross and bottle of holy water and held them up.
"I'll strike you with these!"
I roared, expecting him to fall back, frozen with fear. But he didn't. Instead, he smiled, clicked his fingers again, and suddenly the cross and plastic bottle were no longer in my hands. They were in his. He studied the cross, chuckled, and squeezed it into a little ball, as though it was made of tinfoil. Next, he uncorked the holy water and drank it.
"You know what I love?"
he asked.
"I love people who watch lots of horror movies and read horror books because they believe what they read and hear and come packing silly things like crosses and holy water instead of weapons which could do real damage like guns and hand grenades."
"You mean crosses don't hurt you?"
I stammered.
"Why should they?"
he asked.
"Because you're evil,"
I said.
"Am I?"
he asked.
"Yes,"
I said.
"You must be. You're a vampire. Vampires are evil."
"You should not believe everything you are told," he said. "It is true that our appetites are rather exotic, but just because we drink blood does not mean that we are evil. Are vampire bats evil when they drink the blood of cows and horses?"
"No,"
I said.
"But that's different. They're animals."
"Humans are animals too,"
he told me.
"If a vampire kills a human, then yes, he is evil. But one who just takes a little blood to fill his rumbling belly, where is the harm in that?"
I couldn't answer. I was numb, and no longer knew what to believe. I was at his mercy, alone and defenseless.
I see you are not in the mood for a debate, he said. Very well. I will save the speeches for another time. So tell me, Darren Shen, what is it you want, if not my spider?
She bit Steve Leonard, I told him.
The one known as Steve Leopard, he said, nodding. A nasty business. Still, little boys who play with things they do not understand can hardly complain if...
I want you to make him better,
I yelled, interrupting.
I?
He asked, acting surprised.
But I am not a doctor. I am not a specialist. I am just a circus performer. A freak, remember?
No, I said. You're more. I know you can save him. I know you have the power.
Maybe, he said. Madame Octa's bite is deadly, but for every poison there exists an antidote. Maybe I do have the cure. Maybe I have a bottle of serum which will restore your friend's natural physical functions.
Yes!
I shouted gleefully.
I knew it! I knew it! I...
But maybe...
Mr. Crepsley said, raising a long, bony finger to silence me.
It is a small bottle. Maybe there is only a tiny amount of serum. Maybe it is very precious. Maybe I want to save it for a real emergency in case Madame Octa ever bites me. Maybe I do not want to waste it on an evil little brat.
No, I said softly. You have to give it to me. You have to use it on Steve. He's dying. You can't let him die.
I most certainly can.
Mr. Crepsley laughed.
What is your friend to me? You heard him the night he was here. He said he would become a vampire hunter when he grew up.
He didn't mean it, I gasped. He only said that because he was angry.
Perhaps,
Mr. Crepsley mused, tugging at his chin and stroking his scar.
But again, I ask, why should I save Steve Leopard? The serum was expensive and cannot be replaced.
I can pay for it,
I cried, and that was what he'd been waiting for. I saw it in his eyes, the way they narrowed, the way he hunched forward, smiling. This was why he hadn't taken Madame Octa that first night. This was why he hadn't left town.
Pay for it?
He asked slyly.
But you are only a boy. You cannot possibly have enough money to buy the cure.
I'll pay in bits,
I promised.
Every week for 50 years or as long as you want. I'll get a job when I grow up and give you all my money, I swear.
He shook his head.
No, he said softly. Your money does not interest me.
What does interest you?
I asked in a low voice. I'm sure you have a price. That's why you waited for me, isn't it?
You are clever, young man, he said. I knew that when I woke up to find my spider gone and your note in her place, I said to myself, Larton, there goes the most remarkable child. A true prodigy. There goes a boy who is going places.
Quit with the bull and tell me what you want,
I snarled. He laughed nastily, then grew serious.
You remember what Steve Leopard and I talked about?
He asked. Of course, I replied. He wanted to become a vampire. You said he was too young. So he said he'd become your assistant. That was all right by you, but then you found out he was evil, so you said no.
That about sums it up,
he agreed.
Except if you recall, I was not too keen on the idea of an assistant. They can be useful, but also a burden.
Where's all this leading? I asked.
I have had a rethink since then, he said. I decided it might not be such a bad thing after all, especially now that I have been separated from the Cirque du Freak and will have to fend for myself. An assistant could be just what the witch doctor ordered.
He smiled at his little joke. I frowned.
You mean you'll let Steve become your assistant now?
Heavens no!
He yelped.
That monster? There's no telling what he will do as he matures. No, Darren Shan, I do not want Steve Leppard to be my assistant.
He pointed at me with his long, bony finger again, and I knew what he was going to say seconds before he said it.
You want me?
I sighed, beating him to the punch, and his dark, sinister smile told me I was right. Chapter 25.
You're crazy!
I yelled, stumbling backwards.
There's no way I'd become your assistant. You must be mad to even think such a thing.
Mr. Crepsley shrugged.
Then Steve Leppard dies, he said simply.
I stopped retreating.
Please,
I begged.
There must be another way.
The issue is not open to debate, he said. If you wish to save your friend, you must join me. If you refuse, we have nothing further to discuss.
What if I...
Do not waste my time,
he snapped, pounding on the table.
I have lived in this dirty hole for 2 weeks, putting up with fleas and cockroaches and lice. If you are not interested in my offer, say so and I will leave. But do not waste my time with other options, because there are none.
I nodded slowly and took a few steps forward.
Tell me more about being a vampire's assistant, I said.
He smiled.
You will be my traveling companion, he explained. You will travel with me across the world. You will be my eyes and hands during the day. You will guard me while I sleep. You will find food for me if it is scarce. You will take my clothes to the laundry. You will polish my shoes. You will look after Madame Octa. In short, you will see to my every need. In return, I will teach you the ways of the vampires.
Do I have to become a vampire?
I asked.
Eventually, he said. At first you will only have some vampire powers. I will make you a half-vampire. That means you will be able to move about during the day. You will not need much blood to keep you ticking over. You will have certain powers, but not all. And you will only age at a fifth the regular rate, instead of the full vampire's tenth.
What does that mean?
I asked, confused.
Vampires do not live forever, he explained. But we do live far longer than humans. We age about one-tenth the regular rate, which means for every 10 years that pass, we age one. As a half-vampire, you will age 1 year for every 5.
You mean, for every 5 years that pass, I'll only be 1 year older? I asked.
That is right.
I don't know, I muttered. Sounds dodgy to me.
It is your choice, he said. I cannot force you to become my assistant. If you decide it is not to your liking, you are free to leave.
But Steve will die if I do that,
I cried.
Yes, he agreed. It is your assistance or his life.
That's not much of a choice,
I grumbled.
No, he admitted. It is not, but it is the only one on offer. Do you accept?
I thought it over. I wanted to say no, run away and never return. But if I did, Steve would die. Was he worth such a deal? Did I feel guilty enough to offer my life for his? The answer was yes.
Okay,
I sighed. I don't like it, but my hands are tied. I just want you to know this. If I ever get the chance to betray you, I will. If the opportunity arises to pay you back, I'll take it. You'll never be able to trust me.
Fair enough, he said.
I mean it,
I warned him.
I know you do, he said. That is why I want you. A vampire's assistant must have spirit. Your fighting quality is exactly what drew me to you. You will be a dangerous lad to have around, I am sure, but in a fight, when the chips are down, I am just as sure you will be a worthy ally.
I took a deep breath. How do we do it? I asked. He stood and pushed the table aside, stepped forward until he was about half a meter away. He seemed tall as a building. There was a foul smell to him that I hadn't noticed before. The smell of blood. He raised his right hand and showed me the back of it. His nails weren't especially long, but they looked sharp. He raised his left hand and pressed the nails of the right into the fleshy tips of his left-hand fingers. Then he used his other set of nails to mark the right-hand fingers in the same way. He winced as he did it.
Lift your hands,
he grunted. I was watching the blood drip from his fingers and didn't obey the command.
Now!
He yelled, grabbing my hands and jerking them up. He dug his nails into the soft tips of my fingers, all 10 of them at once. I cried out with pain and fell back, tucking my hands in at my sides, rubbing them against my jacket.
Do not be such a baby,
he jeered, tugging my hands free.
It hurts,
I howled.
Of course it does,
he laughed.
It hurt me too. Did you think becoming a vampire was easy? Get used to the pain. Much of it lies ahead.
He put a couple of my fingers in his mouth and sucked some blood out. I watched as he rolled it around his mouth, testing it. Finally, he nodded and swallowed.
It is good blood, he said. We can proceed.
He pressed his fingers against mine. Wound to wound. For a few seconds, there was a numb feeling at the ends of my arms. Then I felt a gushing sensation and realized my blood was moving from my body to his through my left hand, while his blood was entering mine through my right. It was a strange, tingling feeling. I felt his blood travel up my right arm, then down the side of my body and over to the left. When it reached my heart, there was a stabbing pain, and I nearly collapsed. The same thing was happening to Mr. Crepsley, and I could see him grinding his teeth and sweating. The pain lasted until Mr. Crepsley's blood crept down my left arm and started flowing back into his body. We remained joined a couple more seconds until he broke free with a shout. I fell backwards to the floor. I was dizzy and felt sick.
Give me your fingers,
Mr. Crepsley said. I looked across and saw him licking his.
My spit will heal the wounds. You will lose all your blood and die otherwise.
I glanced down at my hands and saw blood leaking out. Stretching them forth, I let the vampire put them in his mouth and run his rough tongue over the tips. When he released them, the flow had stopped. I wiped the leftover blood off on a rag. I studied my fingers and noted they now had 10 tiny scars running across them.
That is how you recognize a vampire,
Mr. Crepsley told me.
There are other ways to change a human, but the fingers are the simplest and least painful method.
Is that it? I asked. Am I a half vampire now?
Yes, he said.
I don't feel any different, I told him.
It will take a few days for the effects to become apparent, he said. There is always a period of adjustment. The shock would be too great otherwise.
How do you become a full vampire? I asked.
The same way, he said. Only you stay joined longer, so more of the vampire's blood enters your body.
What will I be able to do with my new powers? I asked. Will I be able to change into a bat? His laughter rocked the room.
A bat?
He shrieked.
You do not believe those silly stories, do you? How on earth could somebody the size of you or I turn into a tiny flying rat? Use your brain, boy. We can no more turn into bats, rats, or fog than we can turn into ships, planes, or monkeys.
So what can we do? I asked.
He scratched his chin.
There's too much to explain right now, he said. We must tend to your friend. If he does not get the antidote before tomorrow morning, the serum will not work. Besides, we have plenty of time to discuss secret powers.
He grinned.
You could say, we have all the time in the world.
Chapter 26. Mr. Crepsley led the way up the stairs and out of the building. He walked confidently through the darkness. I thought I could see a bit better than I could when coming in, but that might just have been because my eyes were used to the dark, not because of the vampire blood in my veins. Once outside, he told me to hop up on his back.
"Keep your arms wrapped around my neck," he said. "Do not let go or make any sudden movements."
As I was getting up, I looked down and saw that he was wearing slippers. I thought it was strange, but didn't say anything. When I was on his back, he started running. I didn't notice anything odd at first, but soon began to realize how fast buildings were zipping by. Mr. Crepsley's legs didn't seem to be moving that quickly. Instead, it was as if the world was moving faster and we were slipping past it. We reached the hospital in a couple of minutes. Normally it would have taken 20 minutes, and that was if you sprinted all the way.
"How did you do that?"
I asked, sliding down.
"Speed is relative,"
he said, tugging his red cloak tight around his shoulders, pulling back into the shadows so we could not be seen. And that was all the answer he gave.
"Which room is your friend in?"
he asked. I told him Steve's room number. He looked up, counting windows, then nodded and told me to hop back up on his back. When I was in position, he walked over to the wall, took off his slippers, and laid his fingers and toes against the wall. Then he shoved his nails forward into the brick.
"Hmm," he muttered. "It is crumbly, but it will hold us. Do not panic if we slip. I know how to land on my feet. It takes a very long fall to kill a vampire."
He climbed up the wall, digging his nails in, moving a hand forward, then a foot, then the other hand and foot, one after the other. He moved quickly, and within moments we were at Steve's window, crouching on the ledge, gazing in. I wasn't sure of the time, but it was very late. Nobody was in the room apart from Steve. Mr. Crepsley tried the window. It was locked. He laid the fingers of one hand beside the glass covering the latch, then clicked the fingers of his other hand. The latch sprang open. He shoved the window up and stepped inside. I got down from his back. While he checked the door, I examined Steve. His breathing was more ragged than it had been, and there were new tubes all over his body, hooked up to menacing-looking machines.
"The poison has worked rapidly," Mr. Crepsley said, gazing down at him over my shoulder. "We might be too late to save him."
I felt my insides turn to ice at his words. Mr. Crepsley bent over and rolled up one of Steve's eyelids. For a few long seconds, he stared at the eyeball and held Steve's right-hand wrist. Finally he grunted.
"We are in time," he said,
and I felt my heart lifting.
"But it is a good job you did not wait any longer. A few more hours, and you would have been a goner."
"Just get on with it and cure him," I snapped, not wanting to know how close to death my best friend had come. Mr. Crepsley reached into one of his many pockets and produced a small glass vial. He turned on the bedside lamp and held the bottle up to the light to examine the serum.
"I must be careful,"
he told me.
This antidote is almost as lethal as the poison. A couple of drops too many and...
He didn't need to finish. He tilted Steve's head to one side and told me to hold it that way. He leaned one of his nails against the flesh of Steve's neck and made a small cut. Blood oozed out. He stuck his finger over it, then removed the cork of the bottle with his other hand. He lifted the vial to his mouth and prepared to drink.
"What are you doing?"
I asked.
"It must be passed on by mouth," he said. "A doctor could inject it, but I do not know about needles and the like."
"Is that safe?" I asked. "Won't you pass on germs?" Mr. Crepsley grinned.
"If you want to call a doctor, feel free," he said. "Otherwise, have some faith in a man who was doing this long before your grandfather was born."
He poured the serum into his mouth, then rolled it from side to side. He leaned forward and covered the cut with his lips. His cheeks bulged out, then in, as he blew the serum into Steve. He sat back when he was finished and wiped around his mouth. He spat the last of the fluid onto the floor.
"I am always afraid of swallowing that stuff by accident," he said. "One of these nights I'm going to take a course and learn how to do this the easy way."
I was about to reply, but then Steve moved. His neck flexed, then his head, then his shoulders. His arms twitched, and his legs started to jerk. His face creased up, and he began to moan. "What's happening?" I asked, afraid that something had gone wrong.
"It's all right,"
Mr. Crepsley said, putting away the bottle.
"He was on the brink of death. The journey back is never a pleasant one. He will be in pain for some time, but he will live."
"Will there be any side effects?" I asked. "He won't be paralyzed from the waist down or anything?"
"No," Mr. Crepsley said. "He will be fine. He will feel a bit stiff and will catch colds very easily, but otherwise he will be the same as he was before."
Steve's eyes shot open suddenly and focused on me and Mr. Crepsley. A puzzled look swept across his face, and he tried speaking. But his mouth wouldn't work, and then his eyes went blank and closed again. "Steve!" I called, shaking him. "Steve!"
"That is going to happen a lot," Mr. Crepsley said. "He will be slipping in and out of consciousness all night. By morning he should be awake, and by afternoon he will be sitting up and asking for dinner. Come," he said, "let us go."
"I want to stick around a while longer to make sure he recovers," I replied.
"You mean you want to make sure I have not tricked you?"
Mr. Crepsley laughed.
"We will come back tomorrow and you will see that he is fine. We really must go now. If we stay any..."
All of a sudden the door opened and a nurse walked in.
"What's going on here?"
she shouted, stunned to see us.
"Who the hell are..."
Mr. Crepsley reacted quickly, grabbed Steve's bed covers and threw them over the nurse. She fell down as she tried to remove the sheets, getting her hand stuck in their folds.
"Come,"
Mr. Crepsley hissed, rushing to the window.
"We have to leave immediately."
I stared at the hand he was holding out, then at Steve, then at the nurse, then at the open door. Mr. Crepsley lowered his hand.
"I see," he said in a bleak voice. "You are going to go back on our deal."
I hesitated, opened my mouth to say something, then, acting without thinking, turned and made a dash for the door. I thought he would stop me, but he did nothing, only howled after me as I ran.
"Very well! Run, Darren Shen! It will do you no good! You are a creature of the night now! You are one of us! You will be back! You will come calling on your knees, begging for help! Run, fool! Run!"
And he began to laugh. His laughter followed me through the corridor, down the stairs and out the front door. I kept glancing over my shoulder as I ran, expecting him to swoop down on me, but there was no sign of him on the way home, not a glimpse or a smell or a sound. All that remained of him was his laughter, which echoed through my brain like a witch's cackling curse.
Chapter 27. I acted surprised when Mum got off the phone that Monday morning and told me Steve had recovered. She was excited and did a little dance with me and Annie in the kitchen.
He snapped out of it by himself? Dad asked.
Yes, she said. The doctors can't understand it, but nobody's complaining.
Incredible, Dad muttered.
Maybe it's a miracle,
Annie said, and I had to turn my head aside to hide my smile. Some miracle. While Mum set off to see Mrs. Leonard, I started out for school. I was half afraid the sunlight would burn me when I left the house, but of course it didn't. Mr. Krepsley had told me I would be able to move about during the day. I wondered from time to time if it had been a bad dream. It seemed crazy, looking back. Deep down, I knew it was real, but I tried believing otherwise, and sometimes almost did. The part I hated most was the thought of being stuck in this body for so long. How would I explain it to Mum and Dad and everybody else? I'd look silly after a couple of years, especially at school, stuck in a class with people who looked older than me. I went to visit Steve on Tuesday. He was sitting up, watching TV, eating a box of chocolates. He was delighted to see me and told me about his stay in hospital, the food, the games nurses brought him to play with, the presents that were piling up.
I'll have to get bitten by poisonous spiders more often, he joked.
I wouldn't make a habit of it if I were you, I told him. You might not get well next time. He studied me thoughtfully.
You know, the doctors are baffled, he said. They don't know what made me sick, and they don't know how I recovered.
You didn't tell them about Madame Octa, I asked.
Nah,
he said.
They didn't see much point. It would have meant trouble for you.
Thanks.
What happened to her?
He asked.
What did you do with her after she bit me?
I killed her, I lied.
I got mad and stomped her to death.
Really?
He asked.
Really?
He nodded slowly, never taking his eyes off me.
When I first woke up, he said, I thought I saw you. I must have been mistaken, because it was the middle of the night. But it was a lifelike dream. I even thought I saw someone with you, tall and ugly, dressed in red with orange hair and a long scar down the left side of his face.
I didn't say anything. I couldn't. I looked down at the floor and squeezed my hands together.
Another funny thing, he said. The nurse who discovered me awake swore there were two people in the room, a man and a boy. The doctors think it was her mind playing tricks and have said it doesn't matter. Strange, though, isn't it?
Very strange, I agreed, unable to look him in the eye. I began noticing changes in myself over the next couple of days. I found it hard getting to sleep when I went to bed and kept waking in the middle of the night. My hearing improved, and I was able to hear people talking from far away. In school, I could listen to voices from the next two rooms, almost as if there were no walls between my class and theirs. I began to get fitter. I was able to run about the yard during break and lunch without working up a sweat. Nobody could keep up with me. I was also more aware of my body and was able to control it. I could make a football do pretty much what I wanted, dribbling around opponents at will. I scored 16 goals on Thursday. I grew stronger too. I was able to do push-ups and pull-ups now, as many as I liked. I didn't have new muscles, none that I could see, but there was a strength flowing through me which hadn't been there before. I'd yet to test it properly, but I believed it might be immense. I tried hiding my new talents, but it was difficult. I explained away the running and soccer skills by saying I was exercising and practicing a lot more, but other things were trickier. Like when the bell rang on Thursday at the end of lunch. The ball had just been kicked into the air by the goalie, who I'd put 16 goals past. It was coming towards me, so I stuck up my right hand to catch it. I did, but as I squeezed, my nail sunk in and burst it. And when I was eating dinner at home that night, I wasn't concentrating.
I could hear our next-door neighbours having a fight and I was listening to their argument. I was eating chips and sausages and after a while, I noticed the food was tougher than it should be. I glanced down and realised I'd bitten the head off the fork and was chewing it to pieces. Luckily, no one saw and I was able to slip it into the dustbin as I was washing up. Steve rang that Thursday night. He'd been let out of hospital. He was supposed to take things easy for a few days and not come into school until after the weekend, but he said he was going crazy with boredom, and I persuaded his mum to let him come tomorrow.
"You mean you want to come to school?" I asked, shocked.
"Sounds weird, doesn't it?"
he laughed.
"Normally I'm looking for an excuse to stay home, yet now, when I have one, I want to go. But you don't know how dull it is being stuck indoors all the time. It was fun for a couple of days, but a whole week of it, ugh."
I thought of telling Steve the truth, but wasn't sure how he'd take it. He had wanted to become a vampire. I didn't think he'd like knowing Mr. Crepsley had picked me instead of him. And telling Annie was out of the question. She hadn't mentioned Madame Octa since Steve recovered, but I often found her watching me. I don't know what was going through her head, but my guess is it was something like, "Steve got better, but it wasn't because of you. You had the chance to save him, and you didn't. You told a lie and risked his life just so you wouldn't get into trouble. Would you have done the same if it had been me?" Steve was the centre of attention that Friday. The whole class crowded round and begged for his story. They wanted to know what had poisoned him, how he'd survived, what the hospital had been like, if they'd operated on him, if he had any scars and so on.
"I don't know what bit me," he said. "I was at Darren's house. I was sitting by the window. I heard a noise, but before I could look to see what it was, I got bitten and passed out."
This was the story we'd agreed upon when I went to visit him at the hospital. I felt stranger than ever that Friday. I spent the morning gazing round the classroom, feeling out of place. It seemed so pointless. I shouldn't be here, I kept thinking. I'm not a normal kid anymore. I should be out earning my living as a vampire's assistant. What good will English, history and geography do me now? This isn't my scene. Tommy and Alan told Steve about my skill on the football field.
"He's running like the wind these days,"
Alan said.
"And playing like Pele,"
Tommy added.
"Really?"
Steve asked, looking at me oddly.
"What's brought on the big change, Darren?"
"There isn't any change,"
I lied.
"I'm just on a roll. I'm lucky."
"Listen to Mr. Modest,"
Tommy laughed.
"Mr. Dalton has said he might put him forward for the under-17 football team. Imagine one of us playing for the under-17s. Nobody our age has ever made that team."
"No,"
Steve mused.
"They haven't."
"Oh, it's just Sir talking,"
I said, trying to brush it aside.
"Maybe,"
Steve said.
"Maybe."
I played badly that lunchtime, on purpose. I could tell Steve was suspicious. I don't think he knew what was going on, but he sensed something was different about me. I ran slowly and missed chances I normally would have put away, even without the special powers. My ploy worked. By the end of the game, he'd stopped studying my every move and was beginning to joke with me again. But then something happened which ruined everything. Alan and me were running for the same ball. He shouldn't have been going for it because I was closest, but Alan was a bit younger than the rest of us and sometimes acted stupidly. I thought about pulling back, but I was sick of playing badly. Lunch was nearly over and I wanted to score at least one goal. So I decided, the hell with Alan Morris, that's my ball, and if he gets in my way, tough. We clashed with each other just before reaching the ball. Alan gave a yell and went flying. I laughed, trapped the ball under my foot, and turned towards goal. The sight of blood stopped me in my tracks. Alan had landed awkwardly and cut his left knee. It was a bad gash, and blood was welling up. He'd started to cry and was making no move to cover it with a tissue or scrap of cloth. Somebody kicked the ball away from beneath my foot and set off with it. I took no notice. My eyes were focused on Alan. More specifically, on Alan's knee. More specifically still, on Alan's blood. I took a step towards him. Then another. I was standing over him now, blocking the light. He gazed up and must have seen something odd in my face because he stopped crying and stared at me uneasily.
I dropped to my knees, and before I knew what I was doing, I had covered the cut on his leg with my mouth and was sucking out his blood and gulping it down. This went on for a few seconds. My eyes were closed and the blood filled my mouth. Oh, it tasted lovely. I'm not sure how much I would have drunk or how much harm I would have done to Alan. Luckily, I didn't get the chance to find out. I became aware of people around me and opened my eyes. Nearly everyone had stopped playing and was staring at me in horror. I removed my lips from Alan's knee and looked around at my friends, wondering how to explain this. Then the solution hit me and I jumped up and spread my arms.
I am the Vampire Lord! I yelled. I am the King of the Undead! I will suck the blood from all of you!
They stared at me in shock, then laughed. They thought it was a joke. They thought I was only pretending to be a vampire.
You're a nutter, Shen,
somebody said.
Oh, it's gross,
a girl squealed as fresh blood dripped down my chin.
You should be locked away.
The bell rang and it was time to return to class. I was feeling pleased with myself. I thought I'd fooled everybody. But then I noticed someone near the back of the crowd, and my joy faded. It was Steve, and his dark face told me he knew exactly what had happened. He hadn't been fooled at all. He knew.
End of Disc 4. Disc 5.
Chapter 28. I avoided Steve that evening and rushed straight home. I was confused. Why had I attacked Alan? I didn't want to drink anybody's blood. I hadn't been looking for a victim, so how come I jumped on him like a wild animal? And what if it happened again? And what if next time there was nobody around to stop me and I went on sucking until... No, that was a crazy thought. The sight of blood had taken me by surprise, that was all. I hadn't been expecting it. I would learn from this experience, and next time I'd be able to hold myself back. The taste of blood was still in my mouth, so I went to the bathroom and washed it out with several glasses of water, then brushed